We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
I'm tired of it all. I'm tired of everything. I'm tired of all the doubts, all the comparisons. I don't really pay attention to that. I'm tired of waiting. I'm just excited that camp is here and see what we can do for year two. So that's that, all that stuff. I can't control none of that. All I can do is control my attitude and my effort and go out there and play the game I know how.
First time we get out there and play a real game, you know, in Lambeau, and we play that first regular season game, there's going to be hiccups. He's going to learn from that. And then we just continue to grow as the games go by. But Mitch can handle all of it. He's a very mature kid for that age, and we understand that. And he does not want us to pull back on him because of that. He wants us to load him up, see what he can handle, and that's what we've done.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Parkins remains on holiday. Nick Shepkowski is on this side of the glass today until 5:30. We've got Cubs and Cardinals a little bit later on. Those are Bears sound bites that are fresh. That's red hot Bears copy from today. Mitch Trubisky, he doesn't pay any attention to the criticism, but he's very, very sick of it.
Tired of hearing about it. Don't pay a second's attention to it, but I'm tired of hearing about it.
Yeah. I just want to see him play. I don't want to hear him talk anymore.
Oh, get ready.
I don't want to have to judge his level of maturity by things he says.
I'm tired of it all.
You're going to be judging everything on Mitch Trubisky based off of words for the next 2.5 weeks or so.
Body language. Yeah.
That's what it will be.
Yeah, let's talk football with it. I've been enjoying this guy's company on the radio and privately and many years, more than 30 years. And he's been a part of the Score basically since its inception. He is Pro Football Boy on Twitter. He's Steve Silverman. Hello, Silvio.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Danny sounded good.
Thank you. Thank you. Always good to have you on board. I want to start you with what is one of the bigger NFL stories going into the training camp, at least in my mind it is, because I think the position I used to love so much, and a lot of us did, is changing in a serious way in the NFL, and that's the running back position. I've come around to thinking what the Steelers have offered Le'Veon Bell, $70 million over 5 years, given the way the position is going, how fungible it seems to be these days. I think it's a fair offer, and he should have taken it.
You know what? I think, you know, it's obviously a lot of money, but I think if you're Le'Veon Bell, what you're thinking is, hey, I am the number one running back in the NFL. And, you know, not only for myself, but for all the guys that follow, I have to be paid as the number one guy at my position. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, he'd be very happy to miss more than a couple of weeks of training camp. That
right.
always has something to do with it. But I think, you know, I think we've seen the end of the devaluing of the running back position. I think things have started to turn around again, you know, with Saquon Barkley as the number two draft pick this year, and really he's going to play a very key role for the Giants. I think he's going to help them improve. And, you know, with Bell being so versatile and such a, you know, an excellent running back and having done the job every single time he's been asked to, and I think other guys have really improved the position as well. And I think things are changing for the running backs. I think you are going to see a little bit more diversity in offense, a little bit more of a reliance on the running game than you've seen. I think it started with Ezekiel Elliott when he came to the Cowboys. He really opened eyes. So I want Bell to get his money. I think he's a great player who deserves it.
I think you're entirely right about that. He's right there, just like Danny said, top one or two running backs in the entire NFL, him and Gurley, based off of what they did last year. But when you're handing out a contract, I kind of side with ownership and management in this position. You pay for what you're getting, not as a reward for what you have done. In 5 years of Le'Veon Bell, that's a guy with over 1,500 career touches in his career. He's obviously had some trouble staying on the field because of off-the-field instances, not because of injury.
Yeah, he likes weed.
But you pay for kind of what you get, not necessarily what you've done, and I kind of side with the Steelers on that.
And as you guys know, in the NFL, you know, no matter what kind of contract you sign, you are almost always vulnerable to getting cut the next year or 2 years later. So you have to get as much as you can. It's always been that kind of a battle in the NFL. It's not like Major League Baseball where if you sign a seven-year contract, you get paid for 7 years. It doesn't work like that. He's got to get as much as he can, and that's why, you know, it seems like he comes across as a selfish, me-first dude, and that part isn't going to change. But I understand why he's going for as much as he can.
I love him as a player. I am crazy about his game. He's probably my favorite offensive player to watch in pro football today. His jump cuts are amazing. His vision is something that is incredibly unique, but he's also one hot test away from being suspended for an entire year, right? Isn't that what happens the third time offenders?
I think so. I think you're right. You know, he certainly, his track record in the off the field area is not perfect, but he's got to look out for himself and his contract, and then the Steelers would be protected if he can't play due to some off the field issue. So that's why he's got to go for as much money as he can get. And, you know, he's still in the prime of his career. Eventually you figure he's going to learn something and stay clean and do what he has to stay on the field. And if he doesn't, then he won't get his money.
Let's talk about the NFC North, Steve Silverman. Is it the Vikings division to lose?
I think so. I think to me, they are clearly the best team in the division now. And I really love them with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins proved himself the last 3 years in Washington. And unless he just has a huge problem transitioning from Washington to Minnesota, I don't see this offense getting stopped at all. I mean, they did such a great job, you know, with the patchwork that they had at quarterback position last year. And I love Mike Zimmer as head coach with what he's done with that defense. They seem to have tired out, you know, the last couple of years at the very end. But if they have this kind of quarterback who's going to be so productive, I think the Vikings are clearly the class of the division. I see too many problems with the defense in Green Bay. And Detroit, with a new head coach, I think Matt Patricia certainly has qualified to become a head coach, and he may eventually become a great one, but I think, you know, the first half of his first year, that could be very, very tough for him. And you know, the Bears, well, you know, they're at the bottom right now. So.
Yeah, they are. 7 wins would be a good year, we're saying right now. I hate to look at it in those terms, but it's probably true.
Well, it's just been so bad for so long, and you know, I don't care when the general manager says how fired up he is about the season or the rookie head coach says the same thing. There's so many questions, so many things to prove with this team. And you know, I just talked about, you know, the Packers and the Lions maybe having a few issues, but they're ahead of the Bears. They're not going to beat the Vikings. So, you know, 7 wins probably sounds like a real achievement for this team as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you mentioned the Packers there a moment ago. We always hear Rodgers, 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 understandably so. You mentioned the defense, the talent around him offensively. How's that compare? I mean, they lose Jordy Nelson to free agency, bring in Jimmy Graham. How's the talent there offensively around him compared to years past?
Right. I don't think it's quite as good as it was in the past few years. Jordy Nelson, to me, was a great receiver when he was at his peak, and they've determined that he's not as good or can be as good as he used to be, and now he's going to be playing with the Oakland Raiders and John Gruden. We'll see if Gruden can get anything more out of him. I think the receivers are fine, you know, with Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb. I think they're fine, but I don't think they're quite as explosive as they used to be, and it's just going to be the start of a downturn, I think, for the Pack.
Jimmy Graham essentially is a wide receiver. He's more of a receiver than he is a tight end, even though they still call him a tight end. Aaron Rodgers has not been particularly kind to tight ends. I suppose JerMichael Finley during the Rodgers run would be his favorite target, but with the other weapons you mentioned, and plus they've got a second-year running back now, they're going to probably trust a little bit more. I'm not so high on that signing by the Green Bay Packers. I think they may live to regret the day they gave him all that money.
And with Jimmy Graham, he had that great run with the Saints, but remember what happened when he went to Seattle. It took him a really long time to understand a new system and fit in. Sure, he looked good last year, but before that, he really struggled. Coming to another new team, you really expect him to take to it right away, and that's what scares me about him. I think it's going to take him a while. I think, if there are some problems early on, I think Aaron Rodgers isn't going to look his way as much as he can. Now, it'll be surprising. If he comes out firing right out of the gate and has a two-touchdown game right away against the Bears in the opener, that'll turn that situation around. But I think it takes him a while to get used to a new team, so he may not be so good, right from the start.
Veteran football writer Steve Silverman with us for a few more minutes with me, Mac, and Nick Shepkowski. Nick, sitting in for Danny Parkins today. We're here for another hour and change. Cubs-Cardinals shortly after 6 o'clock tonight right here on your home for every Cubs game, Sports Radio 670 The Score. I want to take you back to the Minnesota Vikings. Is Kirk Cousins the kind of guy who screams to you, I am capable of being a leader, a winner, week after week, and taking my team to a game that has Roman numerals on it?
To me, the answer to that question is yes. To the people in Washington who knew him a lot better than I did, the answer was clearly no, because he was looking for that big contract, not only last year at this time, but the year before that. And they put him off. There were some things about Kirk Cousins, and I think it was personality-wise, that they did not like, because he achieved an awful lot on the field. He has a strong arm. He is an accurate passer. He understands where the rush is coming. He can read the defense and find his secondary receivers. So all of those things tells me, yes, this guy can get the Vikings to the Super Bowl, and he probably could have gotten the Redskins there if they had a better supporting cast. But I do understand that there are certain issues, at least as far as the Redskins were concerned, and that they were personality issues. Mm-hmm. They were the way he he acts, not so much in the locker room, but maybe the maturity factor. But I think in a new environment, I think he's going to do great. I think he is one of the most talented passers in the game, and I expect huge things from
him. Wow, okay.
Last year they had Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, Teddy Bridgewater. They've been trying to fight back his injury a few years ago. Even if he doesn't live up to the full expectation that the money brings with his contract, how much does it benefit them just to have stability, if nothing else, at the quarterback position for a change?
An awful lot, because, as well as those guys played last year, and really it was Case Keenum who stepped up and did the job and was the reason that they got to the playoffs and won a playoff game before they got hammered by the Philadelphia Eagles. The thought process was, is this the week that our quarterbacks really fall apart for us? Is this the week that we can't get it done? I think now with Cousins at quarterback, he's the guy who is going to play the way a great quarterback is supposed to. He's going to be the guy with the saying, jump on my back. I will carry you there. And because the defense is so good, he will do what he has to. He will make a few big throws early, and then they'll be able to run out the game in an awful lot of weeks, I think.
All right. It's moment of truth time for young Nick Shepkowski, my 32-year-old executive producer, with whom I struck a fast friendship, Silverman, for reasons like this. He's got knowledge way beyond his years. I mean, he's the kind of kid. He's not a kid anymore. He's a 32-year-old married man and a homeowner, God bless him. He'll send me a text on January 12th and say, happy Super Bowl IX morning, and we'll exchange thoughts on things that happened well before his parents ever even considered his existence. Go ahead and try to stump the 32-year-old Wonder Boy with a Super Bowl trivia question. Give him a couple of them. We'll see how he does.
There we go. On the spot.
On the spot. Challenging my boy and feeling good about it. My money is on you, Shep.
All right.
All right. I'm going to start you off with what I think is a tough one. Okay, give me the name of the first player to win the Heisman Trophy, to win a national championship, and be a part of a Super Bowl winning team.
So he didn't necessarily have to be starting, just had to play a role then. Is it...
Right. But I am not going to give you the name of a Scribini. I mean, we're talking about a real big-time player.
I'm disappointed in the question, just for the record, because his Heisman Trophy had nothing to do with the Super Bowl, but that's okay. Shep's mind.
No, it's okay.
I still trust him.
I used to have a fascination with the Heisman Trophy when I was like 13 here.
It's a Super Bowl question. He did win the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, so I should know it. Did Jim Plunkett ever win a national championship?
No, he didn't.
No, he and Randy Vataha.
That was a good guess. It was the one and only Tony Dorsett. All right, here's a real Super Bowl question, trivia question, and I know if Dan doesn't know the answer, it's very close to his heart. Okay, give me the name of the first wild card team to win the Super Bowl.
The Raiders over the Eagles, Super Bowl 15.
My boy!
There you go. 1980, 27-10, and Dan's favorite player, Rod Martin, had three interceptions that
The game. Only guy in Super Bowl history with three picks. Yes, and he should have won MVP. They gave it to Plunkett. He had a lot of passing yards, but 80 of them came on a little swing pass to Kenny King in the flat.
Who held the ball in one hand as he ran down the field.
Yes, he did. Loaf of bread made for a great highlight. All right, one more for him.
Okay, so as you said, Jim Plunkett won the Super Bowl MVP, or the Vince Lombardi Trophy. What was the year that they named that MVP trophy the Vince Lombardi Trophy?
Did they name?
Oh boy!
What year was it?
Boy,
I mean, it had to have been probably right after he died, right? He died couple years after the last pass.
He died.
I have no idea what year he actually died. I'll say 73.
That's right around there, I'm guessing.
It was 1970, and that was the year he died. But you figured it out. I mean, you answered it logically. And
Wrong.
Steve Silverman, thanks a bunch. Appreciate it.
Anytime, boys. Happy to do it.
Take care. Have a good weekend. Steve Silverman. Yeah, those were tough.
Those were tough. I kept going to Super Bowl 15. There might be one person in America that appreciates this, and it might be you.
Yeah.
But the only reason I remember probably a decent amount of that Super Bowl, I wasn't born yet, but in the NFL films, like 30-minute feature they do on each Super Bowl, it breaks it down.
Right.
It starts off, was it the day of or like a day later after Ronald Reagan had been sworn into office and the hostages came home? Because there is a big...
Yes. It was right around that. Yes, it was the winter of 1980. You're absolutely right.
That's how it starts, is telling kind of the story with that. And America was welcoming the hostages home, but they had bigger things on their mind that day when the Eagles took the field against the Raiders in Super Bowl 15.
And the Eagles scored first, but it was called back from a penalty. And they only saw the end zone, I think, once the rest of the day.
Yeah, I think that was the case. But
tight
end
Keith Krupfel with a short touchdown reception from Ron Jaworski.
That's how I spent my youth. Everyone's like, how do you remember this stuff? I'm like, I go home from school and I turn on ESPN2 where they're replaying one of the Super Bowl stories from long before I was born.
Those 30-minute specials you get the weekend of the Super Bowl, that's binge viewing for me.
I'll sit in the armchair
for 3
and
hours.
And I have a wife that looks at the DVR and is like, what the hell is it? Why do you care about Super Bowl 10?
Yeah.
I'm like, Steelers won it, baby.
Steelers repeated. Why wouldn't I care about Super Bowl 10?
Of course.
I've also had the second safety in Super Bowl history.
Yeah, I'm like, if Super Bowl 9 ends with a team having 2 points at halftime, so how can you not be thrilled by that?
We're losing the crew. They're flagging over there.
It's all brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up by screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. This hour brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS-4-KIDS. Cars with a K. News of the day, Brandon Morrow headed to the disabled list for the Cubs as he's got a bicep injury. Anthony Bass on his way up to the big league squad. We'll continue to discuss that 20 minutes from now. We'll preview the Cubs and Cardinals series as that gets underway in about 2 hours right here on these airwaves on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. This segment being brought to you by Northwestern Football. The Wildcats, coming off a 10-win season, host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single-game tickets on sale now. NUSports.com is where you get them.
We'll get a Cardinals scouting report in about 10 minutes or so, and then at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to replay, for the benefit of those of you who weren't with us during the 3 o'clock hour yesterday, usually listening habits are habitual, turn a new crowd on to our interview with Dan Patrick, which was very, very introspective on his part. I didn't expect it to go in that direction, but I'm awfully glad it did. You know, look inside the guy.
Yeah, you know, Dan Patrick's a guy that, like, if you have a favorite person in media, that's my guy. Like, I've always thought that of Dan Patrick, because I think what Connor mentioned during Transition Day, oh, he was hosting SportsCenter when they'd replay it all morning long, and from 3 a.m. or whatever it was until 10 a.m., it was the same SportsCenter, and I was just like Connor was. It was, all right. By the time that you could start knowing what highlight was coming next, it's probably the time to go outside and do something else with your life instead of continuing to watch SportsCenter all morning, all summer long. But Dan Patrick was always that guy, and I was a big fan of his show, especially very early on, because coming up as a producer, oh, he gives his producers airtime? Oh, my goodness, that was unseen or unheard of here, kind of, at those points. So it was like, I've always really enjoyed his work and kind of getting to look behind the curtain of him. That'll be fun for anyone that missed it coming up at 5.
You know what else he does for his producers?
What does he do?
He does most of the bookings for his show.
Really?
It's where I picked up that habit. When, see, he was, and I want to get to the Cubs news, but real quickly,
sure.
When I was auditioning for the Four Letter Network and going to Bristol on the weekends to do national shows, which gave me no Woodrow after the first one, I'd much rather do a local show. I don't care if it's Detroit, Philly, Boston. I'd rather have a feeling of community where people have the same interest than spray to all fields around the country. But on Sunday nights, I would wrap my show at 10. Dan did some SportsCenter recuts after their 10, and he was finished at 11. Now, rather than drive back for his morning radio show to his palatial estate, which is about 90 minutes away, and I don't think it's quite 90 minutes away. I've never been to it. I think it's maybe about 75 minutes. But rather than drive home and turn around, he stayed at the Bristol Radisson, which is where ESPN puts up, all of the people who just come in for weekend programming. So I had an hour to kill before he got back to the hotel. So I would go to the local market and find some shrimp and some, I already have beer. You know, that's already there. So we'd have some snacks and talk about our days. And we had some heart to hearts. And we were talking about the bookings of guests. He says, I do it. I do it myself. I mean, it's much harder for somebody to say no to me than it is a producer. Plus, I'm not afraid of rolling up my sleeves and actually booking guests. So since that time, I've tried, and I don't always do maybe as well as I should at it, but the guys I know, I'll text them, and I'll give you guys a little bit of a break.
That's awesome. No, it's appreciated, too.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to be chasing down people all the time. Let me help you. Let Danny Parkins help you. He's not too big for that. He does it.
You will not get a complaint from me on that avenue.
Right.
Story of the day that we have been discussing, and we will preview the Cubs and Cardinals series here in just a matter of moments. Brandon Morrow to the disabled list, 10-day DL, bicep injury, going to get some time off of his arm for the bicep flare-up, I guess, there. Anthony Bass on his way up from AAA. He gets the call, recalled, I guess, from Iowa. To me, this is where the next 2 weeks are very important for the Cubs. I don't want to, like Joe Maddon's never going to tell you, oh, this is more important than the next one. All 162 count the same.
They got a chance to make some noise here.
But everything you've heard from day one of this season has been, well, post-All-Star break, Maddon turns it on. The Cubs turn it on for him. They are a different team. They're rested. They know how to come out of the break swinging. And they've always had a better record with Maddon, second half of the year, post-All-Star break of the year, versus the first half of the year. The Brewers' schedule out of the gate here for the next 2.5 weeks goes something like this. 3 against the Dodgers at home.
I hope you'll give it to our listeners exactly as this.
3 against Washington.
Uh-huh.
4 at San Francisco. The Giants have not lost a home series since April.
Right.
4 at L.A. for the Dodgers. And 3 against a Colorado team that's knocking on the door of a possible wild card berth. 17 straight against those teams, some of the better teams in the National League. Now, the Cubs, it's not easy. 5 against St. Louis. Arizona's a first-place team right now. 3 more against St. Louis, then at Pittsburgh, 4 against San Diego. It's 6 games of those 18 are under 500 that they'll play by Sunday, August 5th. But based off of everything that you've been told, and you can't keep going after, everyone keeps going, oh, Maddon and the Cubs turn it on. Second half of the year, they're great. They are lights out. They went 6-0 or whatever it was.
Time
as
to do
soon
it.
As they got Quintana. This is when you do it.
Yep.
This is when you look up in 2 weeks and it's, oh my goodness. Well, that's swelled to 5.5 games. It's 6.5 games. You want to go into the playoffs a well-rested team. You want to have your rotation in order. And all of that, we've seen how much it does matter when you're able to set your rotation
sure.
for it to work. You want all of that to go into place and work out in your favor? These are the kind of games that you have to play well this 2.5-week stretch.
Yeah, that is a challenging stretch for Milwaukee, and the Cubs have a chance to distance themselves a little bit. Now, it only means something if they continue to build off of that. I don't think they need to cruise and win the division by double-digit games.
No.
It doesn't really matter, but it would be nice to have those back couple weeks of the season to be able to do with what you want regarding your starting rotation and also getting your positional players who've been beaten up a little bit or are tiring a little bit of time off.
Yeah, I think I think last year you saw them play more stressful games the second half of September than they probably wanted to. I think you saw a team that the bullpen, heck, you had what, 2 arms that would really could be trusted by the time the Washington series came around, and I think that all kind of showed itself. And that's one that, yeah, you want to have better control of that, not maybe entering September, but you don't want it to be September 21st, and I mean, you're battling the Brewers for the first spot and not having to play in a wild card game to get into the dance.
This Morrow injury today, Shep, really, really just puts an exclamation point on the sentence, the Cubs need to make a move for the bullpen before the 31st. They probably knew that anyway, but this just, it just drives home what we knew about him when they signed him. And I think he's been decent, but he hurt his back putting pants on. How he
Has that never happened to you?
No, surprisingly not.
Taking my pants off.
Taking my pants. Yeah, taking them off, not putting them on. Yeah, he was in a hurry, perhaps. Yeah,
well,
that's never happened to me either.
Yeah.
Except coming home from camp, that story I told earlier.
Church camp will do it to you.
I don't know how he – did he hurt his biceps? And it is biceps. Not by
right, because there's 2 of them.
There's
we
two
learned
of them.
That
we
earlier
learned
this year.
We learned that this season. We're getting smarter.
More like an anatomy class.
Smarter by the month. Was he taking out the garbage? I mean,
I don't
has
know.
Anybody said how he hurt his biceps?
Maybe he was taking off his shirt, ripping his shirt off, had business to do during the All-Star break, and got a little crazy doing so.
Yeah, well, I hope he's in one piece soon. But, yeah, the Cubs have to – they've got to solidify their bullpen. They're getting tired already because of all of the truncated starts from guys who can't find the strike zone with a search party.
Yeah, Cubs and Cardinals coming up tonight here on 670 The Score. In moments, we'll talk to Kevin Wheeler, host of Midday Show down in St. Louis, and get all the information on the Cardinals. They've had a managerial change, see what's going on with them, preview the series a bit. This segment brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10. $10 off. Spot Hero, Park Smarter. Nick Szczepkowski, Dan McNeil. Little Cubs-Cardinals preview coming up next on 670 The Score.
A lot of times when you're faced to make this type of decision, you always ask yourself, why now or when? And the more we reflected on this, Bill and I felt this was a unique opportunity to hit the reset button. As we enter this all-star break, it gives everybody a chance to reflect on where we are and what we need to do differently. And as we turn the keys over to Mike Schilt, having a new voice, having a fresh voice is something that we feel is important as we look to the second half.
That's the voice of John Mozeliak, general manager, boss of the St. Louis Cardinals. They fire longtime manager Mike Matheny over the weekend. Mike Schilt, the new man in charge in St. Louis. For more on the state of the Cardinals, what they might be doing here in the next 2 weeks, we go out to Kevin Wheeler, host at 101 ESPN in St. Louis, host of their midday show down there. Thank you, Kevin, for taking the time. All things good in Cardinal land now that the manager has finally been fired and things been changed up. They're all on the right path, I assume, right?
Oh, yeah. Puppies and sunshine and rainbows. Yeah, the clubhouse had a nice party for Mike Schilt after he got his first win. Cardinal Nation is happy. In reality, there is a sense of relief. I'm being a little bit of a smartass there, but there is a lot of relief because, you know, there's been kind of a cloud hanging over Mike Matheny throughout the course of the year. Everybody knew if they didn't make the playoffs, he'd be out, and he's, you know, Captain Serious all the time. So I think there's going to be a little bit more lightness in there, but as to whether or not that helps the team win, who the hell knows?
Is Mike Schilt going to employ a new spy, or is he going to use his predecessor's spy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I forgot to ask about that earlier. Well, in fairness, the spies worked for the front office and not for Matheny. If they worked for Mike, maybe they would have had a little more success on the field. But Schilt is a front office guy, so I don't know. Maybe they've got somebody because the other guy's in jail, so they can't really go back to that, can they?
Yeah, that's a little bit tough. Was it – you're up close with it every day, discussing them, breaking it all down every day. Was it as bad up close as it appears from, what are we, 250 miles or so north of there? Because it seems like it just everything was in disarray. Maybe it's because it's the Cardinals and you think of them as being as successful as organization as there is in the NL. But was it as bad up close on a daily basis as it seems from here?
I think maybe even worse because, you know, when you have everybody seeing something that the front office isn't acknowledging. I mean, guys, up until they fired the manager, they were all holding it. They were all covering his back. They're like, Mike's doing a great job. We believe in Mike. I mean, really, up until that last day, I mean, the rest of us had seen this for a long time, and you could see it, man. You could just walk into a room, and you can see when guys are quiet, when guys have been – you guys have all both been around it. You know what it looks like when you see it. It's a team that didn't have any life. Nobody was happy coming to work. I mean, you guys have read all and heard all the Dexter Fowler stuff with him not communicating with the manager. But this started to come out last year when Molina went after Mike on Instagram because the manager happened to suggest he thought his 34-year-old catcher looked a little tired one night. I mean, that was a pretty good sign that stuff has been going this way. So, yeah, it's been pretty tense around for sure.
297 miles, Shep, to be exact. your math was closer than I was expecting. I thought it was actually a tick longer than that. How did Cardinals Nation, for the most part, Kevin, handle the news? Were most of them relieved a little bit?
Yes. There was some surprise because this is not something they do, right? They don't fire managers in season. They had never done this before. I mean, DeWitt Jr. took over this team in 96, and they had two managers. They had Tony La Russa and they had Mike Matheny. So they're not huge fans of change. So there was some surprise, but I'd say the vast majority, and there's a small minority that were very much Mike Matheny supporters, probably people that were fans of his when he played for the Cardinals and they wanted to maintain some loyalty. But I'd say at least 80-85% of the fan base was relieved and just happy that we're not going to see the dumb things that we saw all the time, like double switching out your three-hole hitter in a one-run game or going to the same reliever 17 times in a row. Just some things that you just don't see other managers do.
Are you close enough to it to be able to answer this question? With the criticisms made by the Cardinals GM about Fowler, were those fair?
Well, I mean, I would say I'm not close enough to see what goes on behind the scenes. I used to do the Cardinals pre and post game, but that was about 4 years ago. So I haven't been in that regard to see it up close. But as you might imagine, I got a lot of friends that are up close that work there every single day. And I would say that nobody drives Dexter Fowler's work habits in the way that John Mozeliak seemed to. But there was a little bit of buzz that he wasn't what everybody expected. That there just wasn't as lively as people. He wasn't as much of a push in the positive direction as expected. But again, that's secondhand, man. That's, you know, it's not what I saw personally because I'm not always down there. But there was some of that. But I wonder how much of that was just because of the overall atmosphere and compared to what he was used to before he came here.
Speaking with Kevin Wheeler, 101 ESPN St. Louis, where you can find all of his work. Cardinals find themselves in an interesting spot, 7.5 games out of first place. I mean, the way we've talked about them, you'd think that they're 30 games under 500. There's still, I mean, outside chance to make a run at this. Is there a chance? It feels weird putting St. Louis and the Cards in this department, but is there a chance that they sell off some pieces here in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, there's a real chance. If the Cubs kick some of that butt in the next couple of weeks, I think there's a really good chance that they do a retool. They're not going to do the tank job thing. They're not going to go all out and completely change the roster. But look, they got a roster that doesn't really have a lot of smart fit. You got a lot of good defenders that aren't hitting and a lot of pretty good hitters that can't defend, and that's a bad combination in the National League. So they're going to have to do a few things. It's just a matter of how big. And if they struggle, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they decided to go a little bigger than everybody expects. The stories are already popping up in both St. Louis, here in St. Louis, and in New York about the Yankees having interest in Carlos Martinez. If things go really south, I wouldn't be surprised if they look to do something big to kind of shake up their everyday lineup.
With Carlos Martinez, he's on the mound tonight against Kyle Hendricks. Catch that here on The Score just after 6 o'clock. He's a guy that, like, you've always heard all the potential nasty movement on his fastball. It just feels like he's never taken that next step. What's he like on a, I guess, on a daily basis and seeing each of his 32-ish starts a year?
You know, when he lacks focus, he has troubles. And he's a guy that's kind of high strung. So if you guys think back to how Carlos Zambrano was, probably about 80-90% of that type personality, maybe not as over the top, it's demonstrative, but certainly a guy that could vary from start to start in terms of his focus. The funny thing is, and by the way, we all agree, everybody in St. Louis kind of agrees, he hasn't done what was expected or he hasn't been what everybody hopes. And still, if you look at things like earned run average, opponent batting average, he's been one of the top 12 or 13 pitchers in the National League over the last 3.5 years. So I think it's just the radical inconsistency. He'll go a month with a 160 ERA and then another month with a 4.5. And I think that's the part that he's got to figure out, is the ability to be the same guy all the time. And, you know, this basically kind of a nutshell describes the team too. At times they look great, and at other times they're completely clueless. And, you know, the good teams just don't go through that radical ride up and down the roller coaster.
Kevin Wheeler from 101 ESPN in St. Louis. Follow his work on Twitter at KevinWheeler94. Appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime for The Score, man. I've been following you guys for over 20 years. You guys are the best.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it. Good reporting, man.
That's all because of you.
No, stop that.
That's all because of you. I was told yesterday you're on the Mount Rushmore of The Score. So
yeah, I was gone for nine of those 20 years.
No, I didn't say it was a strong Mount Rushmore. Just said you happened to be on it. Yesterday, you spent some time with Terry Bors. You visited with Dan Patrick, and you talk about a look behind the curtain. Some really great stuff that I know you want to replay here in the 5 o'clock hour. That's to come. That segment brought to you by Erin Hills Golf Course in Southeast Wisconsin, host of the 2017 U.S. Open. Follow in the footsteps of the game's best players for day trips, overnight getaways. Make Erin Hills your next golf destination. Play, stay, eat, and meet. Business or pleasure, erinhills.com, erinhills.com. Nick Szczepkowski in for Danny Parkins on the McNeil and Parkins Show, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.